are listening to 94.1 KPFA and 89.3 KPFB in Berkeley, 88.1 KFCF in Fresno, 97.5 K248BR in Santa Cruz, and online at kpfa.org. The time is 2 p.m. Stay tuned next for the Visionary Activist Show.
Welcome, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So before we dive into our splendid show, and we are in Fun Drive, of course, but we hear from one of our great allies, Andres Contreras, who says he's here in Honduras and around the world. There are commemorations around the second anniversary of the assassination of our beloved Berta Cáceres. Leonardo DiCaprio will be coming to Honduras with Nobel Peace Laureate Rigoberto Menchú to honor Berta's legacy. And so we remember, you know, the beautiful women who loved Berta, you know, when they came on stage at the Goldman Awards, because she had received one the year before her assassination. They chanted this beautiful song. They go, "Berta did not die, she multiplied." Right, so may that spirit in all of our hearts multiply. And in keeping with that, it is full moon waxing. Oh, it's almost full soon in a couple hours. Full moon, entheo, endogenous, indigenous medicine. I like saying that together. Just, you know, you can chant it at home. Entheo, endogenous, indigenous medicine. So we are delighted more than perfectly to host Dr. Joe Tafur, Colombian-American family physician, originally from Phoenix, Arizona. After training at UCLA, Dr. Tafur spent 2 years in academic research at the UCSD Department of Psychiatry in a lab focused on mind-body medicine. And after his research fellowship over a period of 6 years, he lived and worked in the Peruvian Amazon at the Traditional Healing Center. Oh, he's going to have to help me pronounce this. Nihuarau Centro Espiritual, working closely with Master Shipibo guide Ricardo Amaringo, trained as an ayahuasquero. Dr. Joe Tafur is author of The Fellowship of the River, A Medical Doctor's Exploration into Traditional Amazonian Plant Medicine. And his website, with all kinds of feasting available, is Dr. Joe Tafur, TAFUR.com. Welcome, Joe.
Thank you very much. Sorry. Thank you very much for having me.
No, it's a delight. We have so many allies in common. There's the wonderful Rachel Harris, and then there's Dr. Andrew Weil, and then there's Matt Okabe, and then there's Rick Strassman, and then there's, you know, Terrence McKenna, and the ancestor Richard Schultes, and probably thousands more. But it is the confluencing of all allies. We go humans, plants, spirits, guiding intelligence. But just for the whimsy of it, have you seen the movie Coco?
I did. I loved it.
Isn't it wonderful?
It's wonderful. It's very wonderful. And my sister-in-law is Mexican-American, and so my nephews are half Colombian, half Mexican, and it was just great to take them to see it, you know?
I thought that movie did magic. I went with a friend of mine, a fellow journeyer on entheogens and everything, but who had spent a lot of time in Mexico at the during the Day of the Dead, and she said, since seeing the movie now in her mind, her memory of when she's there, the bridge exists, the bridge between the living and the dead. I think it's a movie that shapes reality, and that it is actually entheogenic and part of, you know, the positive renaissance that we're engaged in. Anyway, I'm so glad you saw it. I was thinking of that when I was reading in your fabulous book, The Fellowship of the River, about your grandfather, your abuelito Pepe, and I go, oh, I hope he's seen Coco. I hope he's seen Coco. And you have.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's just like the world of imagination and mysticism that extends beyond and also includes, you know, the entheogens. But, you know, this is something, that kind of thing, Day of the Dead and some of this mystical access in Latin American culture, you know, is not restricted to the entheogens, but it's part of it. you know, and some of the imagery is related to that. Some of the imagery is just from the dream world, you know, that people do make, you know, they do contact it. And I think, you know, that's an important distinction in a way, because that kind of broadens it, you know. It's not just for the entheogenic user, that kind of access, and down there it's not at all. So everyone's celebrating Day of the Dead, you know, and everyone's open to this stuff, whether they did peyote or they didn't do peyote or mushrooms or whatever. So I think that's an important thing to, you know, and in that sense, it's a children's movie, because it's not just about exploring those things. It's about, you know, like we say in Spanish, la más allá, you know, that which exists beyond our understanding, you know, but still there it is. We experience it. And so it's just, it kind of speaks to that they don't deny that, you know, in the culture.
Right, there. Right. And I love that when I saw it at the movie house, and I do encourage everybody to see it, I really do. You know, I love that half of the audience was Hispanic families, and there was a wonderful dad with his son next to me, and at the end of the movie, of course, everybody's streaming with tears, and somebody said, is it a sad movie? It's like, no, these are tears of beauty and kinship. And the Hispanic man, you know, got up and rushed away at the end of the movie, because he was streaming with tears and didn't want anyone to see. And we go, that's great. So,
well,
you're beautiful.
It's such a big deal for everybody, you know, for the Latin culture, for the Mexican culture to achieve that kind of exposure and dignity, that they'd make a Disney movie about them. You know, that has not happened yet. That's the first time.
Right.
That's really what
exactly.
That's about for that segment of the culture.
So
that's
you,
why
you
my sister-in-law was crying, you know.
Oh, it's so beautiful. It's so beautiful on so many levels. And I don't want to do any spoilers, but every time you think like, oh, no, they come through in this fabulous way. But you speak in your book, you know, about you being a bridge and guiding. And I love that the word metaphor means bridge. It means to carry across the realm of dreams and metaphors. So we are opening these things up. So part of my wild enthusiasm about hosting you today on Fundrive, I will be responsible and mention that in a moment, but that it is, it seems so much a part, not that everyone must or should do entheogen plant sacraments, but that the plants themselves would love to heal humans and guide them back to conscious kinship. Is that an animistic truth or feeling that is kin to you?
Yeah, I think that the plants definitely, you know, from the traditional culture and for those people that go to experience it, they have that experience, you know, that they realize, well, there's these kindred spirits that are here to offer help, you know, and people are always so impressed with kind of like the generosity and the kindness, often anyways. And that being said, yeah, it's not for everybody, you know, it's a little more involved than that, you know. It's not enough that it's not something to play around with, you know. I mean, they're there for responsible use. You know, so that's a really important part of it. That's my experience, you know, with ayahuasca. I would say very clearly to people, you know, yes, these things have the power to really help, but really the plants, you know, in a sense, maybe are only willing to take you as far as you're ready to go, you know. So there's a lot to be said for your preparation and where you're at in your life and where you're at in your sincerity and your earnestness about seeking help and your capacity to integrate, you know, the healing and the lessons that you might receive. So all that stuff is really important to consider, you know, because otherwise it's disrespectful, in fact, to the plants, you know, that offer this kind of sacred opportunity.
Well,
go in with that kind of reverence.
And it is intriguing. I've been to a number of ceremonies. Some were very sketchy, and not, you know, just really faux shamans, because everybody wants to be a shaman. I often begin talks by saying, anybody here not a shaman or a life coach? It'll just save so much time, because it's become a kind of brand. But I just want to put this on our work altar here. It's like one can be involved with sketchy gurus and sketchy shamans and sketchy ceremonies, but the sacrament can wend its way through even the sketchiest of circumstances, don't you think?
It can, but it may not necessarily.
Right, you know right. I mean? That's true.
It can be disgraced to that point. So that's also important to say again, you know. The reverence makes a humongous difference. And so it's kind of the over-reliance on the sacrament and the discussion of the over-reliance of the sacrament. For example, well, everyone just needs to take LSD and then everyone's going to wake up, you know, or, hey, everyone needs to drink ayahuasca. And it's like, well, I could take you down to the Amazon, to a region where people have been drinking ayahuasca for you know, millennia, perhaps. And you could see that it's not necessarily the end-all, be-all solution to anything. So
right,
it requires more than that. You know, that's really worth clarifying.
Right. No, it's very important because it goes into our category. Just because you've fill in the blank does not necessarily mean, it's like just because you've taken many entheogens.
You know?
I'm sorry, say what?
The proof is in the pudding, right?
There you go.
Somebody's, you know, that's it. And so then that's medicine and that's healing and it takes on many, many forms. That being said, you know, with the right preparation, the responsible use, amazing possibilities open up. You know, beautiful possibilities. And
so
it comes through even in the sketchiest, but I still, you know, I can't recommend that myself.
No. I had a very sketchy experience with a completely faux dingbat alleged shaman person. Terrible, really impositional, all kinds of things. I just sort of withdrew and was like, "Hello, plant. I can feel you in there, making your way through the thing." I wouldn't volunteer for this.
You.
I wouldn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I wanted to offer you one of our great allies, Egyptian poet Yohiel Ababidi, says, you can't bury pain without expecting it to grow roots. And I want to, that seems a part of the worthy pain that people experience in your research and experience, is that it's exposing those roots, right?
Yeah, no, that's true. That's very true. It's a lot about that. It's just, it's the culture and the society that seems to like have that tendency to want to bury pain. But then it's this reality that the Egyptian, you know, guy's talking about, that it grows roots. And so it's not just going to go away because you bury it. And in fact, it may make you ill, you know,
or
make your children ill or make your society ill. And so it's a matter of health. You know, that's why. That's the reason to expose it, is not to try to torture someone or, you know, to whatever, an act of bravery. It's simply to heal, you know?
Yes. And do you find also that there's some component, you know, since we're all in this dream together and the more people that heal, it's good for the collective, that some dedication to collective well-being be part of the personal experience? Is that a part of your rituals?
I think that yes, it is, and I think that ultimately, like, you know, as someone comes to deeper healing, and which involves kind of deeper connection, or it opens that access, you know, as you heal more, then a lot of times people describe feeling more connected to all that is, and starting to realize that your health does depend on you know, the health of your society, your community, your relationships, your ecosystem. That's just, you know, those things ultimately have to be addressed.
Well, one of the later chapters in your beautiful book is, you know, what is love?
Right.
And I gather that a number of the people that you're working with, it brought them not to painful memories. I mean, when ayahuasca guided them, but to go, oh, right, when I was by my ill uncle's bedside, that it is a guide to, like, right, I know what it is.
Right. Yeah, well, I mean, it's many times people, there are painful experiences going through that kind of healing and, you know, opening up those wounds, you know, it's the healing process isn't always that pleasant, but sometimes it's extremely joyful and beautiful, you know, to come into that awareness and consciousness. And in the case of the individual you're describing, who, you know, I could just briefly summarize it. It was a 75-year-old guy who came down from, he's German, and he wanted to try to experience spirit. He had never really experienced spirit as he understood it, and despite a lifetime of kind of performance, coaching, and meditation, and all kinds of technical kind of approaches, And so then he finally did get into this dialogue with ayahuasca and his ceremonies, and just him being kind of such a developed person, rapidly got into this very interesting dialogue about what is consciousness of consciousness. That's what he wanted to know, and the ayahuasca told him, love. And then he said, well, what is love? You know, how do we, can we define love? And so for, in order for him to understand love, the ayahuasca took him through this journey of taking him back to when he was 8 months old, when his mother died, and that he had only a vague 74 years ago or whatever it was, he was only told kind of vaguely, well, she died somehow of complications, some illness that may have been related to his birth. And that's all he really knew. And ayahuasca took him back to the moment when she died, and he was there in the bed next to her, as if, you know, he realized, well, he must have been there many times. As an 8-month-old, they probably had him with her. So he was there in that moment when she passed away, and he experienced it kind of through his baby consciousness, that he felt that she was gone. And his immediate response that he experienced was something like guilt. You know, like, well, I must have done something wrong for this to happen, because this isn't really how it's supposed to go. You know, there's some part of us, so many people, children, childhood trauma, where they blame themselves, you know, because it doesn't go along with this idea or this expectation, this hope that, you know, you're going to, this understanding that you're going to receive love as a child and be received in love. And so then he had that realization, and then the ayahuasca told him, now I can tell you, you know, what is love? Love is the acceptance of all things as they are without reservation. That, you know, you, but don't surely, have to.
Yeah, but so there's surely briefly, some.
Oh, go ahead.
Sorry. No, you go ahead. Sorry.
I would just say this one last statement. Just, you know, so then it was like, you don't have to feel guilty because your mother died. You don't have to feel guilty because this is the way you came into the world. You have to accept it. You know, and that's how you're going to learn about loving yourself. And that was kind of, you know, that was his kind of understanding and lesson, and turned into a lot more, opened up into a lot more things.
Right, and I had the great good fortune to meet Andy Weil, Dr. Andrew Weil, when I was like 14, yeah, and then later with interesting older allies, it really was responsible entheogenic use that sure. liberated me from left-wing nihilistic teenage grumpitude, because it was like, oh, beauty within, that's so fantastic. And right. and as you probably know, Andy got paid to go around the world taking drugs. That was 1970. Right. And he did say there's no culture without drugs, but there are cultures without problems. And that involves ceremony and also whole plant. You know, and we just sort of laid out a kind of criterion going, because a lot of times grown-ups will call me disturbed about their kids. They're on drugs. I go, what kind of drugs? Oh, I don't know. I go, big difference. Let's just put right. on the table that which guides us to intimacy is a healing tonic, and that which plunges us into alienation is a toxin. And people are, I think that's a useful criterion, whether it's something we eat or feel or think or drink or whatever. Right. It's like, does it guide us into intimacy? Ah, la, 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 and kinship, you know, or, right. we're alone, pathetic weenies. So that sense of the restoration of intimacy right now is so important. And you do a great job of delineating, well, we've got ayahuasca tourism and this riptide of ancient meeting modern, and some of it is good and interesting experiment, and some of it is way sketchy. And you, in part of the book, The Fellowship of the River, you're talking to traditional ayahuasqueros who are not really completely good with the extraction of DMT.
Right.
As a too modern thing, and I've been at a DMT experience, and it's like very interesting, but very yang. Like, I had to go find Terrence McKenna, his ancestral recordings, and did a show with Rick Strassman on it too, because Terrence right. said it's death by astonishment, and it's like, whoa, yeah.
Right.
And it is very yang, and it isn't completely pleasant, but it is interesting. It's like, whoa. There were some traditional ayahuascaros there who were like, oh, that's interesting too, you know. But back to the people that you work with, they're, again, back to kind of, you know, their principle that Andy then gives voice to about the whole thing, the ceremony, the songs, the Ikaros.
Right. It's kind of like, you know, we could throw a birthday party for you with like this really wonderful chocolate cake and have all your friends and family there and, you know, play your favorite songs and do all that. Or I could just give you like a little vial of glucose and say happy birthday. You know, I mean, that's, I think, good. It's so reductionist. Yeah. It's like, come on, guys. Right. You know, it's too obvious.
That's good. Yeah. That's a lovely metaphor. Let me be responsible to our team here. We are with our wonderful guest, Dr. Joe Tafur. His website is drjoetafur.com. He's the author of The Fellowship of the River, and we have a whole entheo section of the Visionary Activist Show. It's just anything that we need to know or to have a sane world, and the entheo realm is part of that. So we are in Fun Drive, and we're offering some thank you gifts just briefly, and then, you know, at the end of the show we'll do more, but you can call now. We have the fantastic Visionary Activist shopping bag that says magic is simply a willingness to cooperate with everything. It's purple, it holds a lot. It's very thin, folds up to nothing. I like it. I have one here for a pledge of $60. We have my pretty darn great essay, Dreams and Disasters, that I wrote in 1989, and it's still incredibly pertinent, in which I said, in the outer rainforest and the inner rainforest, our soul's domain, lie untold medicinal plants that could well heal the plagues with which humanity is afflicted. The literal and symbolic question then is, will we find the thing that heals us before we kill it? So it's a pretty good essay that I wrote in 1989. It's a vision of 1989 into 2050. It's still pertinent. Some of it was a little over-optimistic, but still pretty good. So you can have me reading that in a recording, and then also the PDF for a pledge of 100. And then we're also offering 3 months of Monday night trickster training. Can tell you more about that, but it's 6 p.m. on Mondays. We all gather to hone our intimacy skills and our trickster capacity to not be snookered into polarity, but be agents of spiraling. That's for a pledge of $200. Any or all of those things can be yours by calling 1-800-439-5732 or online securely. For all of you people out there, we have a lot of listeners on the line in Alaska and Australia and Japan and Syria. We have listeners in Syria and South Africa. You know, kpfa.org. Again, so even though Dr. Joe Tafur is completely fascinating and magnetizing, you can still call while listening. 1-800-439-5732. All right, now back to you, Joe.
I would just like to follow up with that thought. And I'm not saying that DMT isn't powerful and that people don't have amazing, you know, mind expanding experiences and sometimes very healing experiences. I'm just saying it's not the same thing, you know, and that you know, that idea, that concept that ayahuasca is just a primitive DMT delivery device, and, you know, we've already figured it out because now you don't have to throw up and you don't have to do this and you don't have to do that. You know, and it's just missing the boat, you know. I get it that it's not the same thing. And anybody that has any, like, real experience that's gone into it and explored the depths of it has seen, wow, there's something else here. You know, and that's the point. And so, you know, a lot of people, they throw everything together. Oh, you know, I already tried. I did LSD. I did that. So, you know, ayahuasca, I know how that goes. And meanwhile, there's people, you know, very intelligent people that study it for decades. And so, you know, like anything, it just, there's, you can take it a little further than maybe a lot of people do. And then, you know, that's what the book is trying to demonstrate is within a deeper tradition, an advanced tradition in which multi-generational wisdom is on board. You know, you can achieve things that I haven't really seen a lot of people doing with DMT. And I haven't seen people do with a lot of other, you know, just psychedelics that they've kind of picked up and started utilizing. They're not really getting the kind of results and guidance.
Right.
I mean, at least in my experience, right? So, I mean, I'm sure it also exists.
Well, I mean, I think these are useful conversations to have. And I loved your phrase, but I forgot the last part of it. You go multi-generational guidance?
Multi-generational wisdom, you know, like I said.
Wisdom, thank you.
Yeah. You know, it's just like everyone's like, okay, I get it, that it's the kind of entheogenic movement is, you know, at this point within the United States is semi, you know, counterculture, and it's kind of birth, you know, was a countercultural movement as it needed to be. And so there's a lot of generational disconnect kind of like mixed up in it. You know, there's not a lot of people talking to their parents or their grandparents about, you know, the things they, there are some, but maybe not, it's not as... as you might see in some other tradition, for example, music, you know. You got jazz, you know, and these guys, you got Coltrane playing, and they're building upon, you know, just an ancestry that goes into, you know, ultimately thousands of years. And you see, wow, they can take it a lot further than someone that just picked it up, you know, in a weekend workshop and has been working on it for a couple of years. You know, like I was
right.
I'm giving a lecture usually in some building, and I'm like, let me just give you a simple example, architecture. You know, like the building that we're sitting in right now was not developed within one person's lifespan. You know, it involved much more, many more generations to just get to this point to have the kind of architecture that we're living in now. And so,
well,
ideally,
yeah, I mean, yeah, architecture, really good architecture, right, as opposed to postmodern squares and glass and
well, there's
anyway,
that.
Even that,
you know, to pop it up is not, you know, it didn't. Somebody didn't just come off with it within about 75 years, you know? It's just the point is
right.
that there's many bodies of knowledge that extend beyond one lifespan that accumulate more wisdom than... There's some ignorance that can be accumulated as well, but there's also knowledge that, you know, it takes longer than what you might just figure out on your own as some kind of prodigy.
No, that's great. That's really clear. Yeah, it's like what I often say is, you know, Picasso could really paint and draw, so he could undraw, and James Joyce could really write, so he could unwrite. And people who simply imitate the end process, there's no power to it.
You
got to know the thing.
Yep.
Right. Exactly. No, that's a great point. And the plants themselves, you know, and so. You know, many people, certainly in this audience, know what ayahuasca is and may have experienced it. But just to go back to basics, you know, it's the woody vine, and then you say it's the tryptamine-rich chacuna bush, the psychotria viridis, the source of DMT, and it's part of that mysterious blend. Like, how did people know to blend those things? And
right.
And I love when I hosted Jeremy Narby before he was a famous person, but when the Cosmic Serpent was just coming out, and I did love his playful humility then, because he asked his ayahuasca teachers, you know, how do you know what the plants do? And they said, the plants tell us, you silly British scientist. And he's like, oh, right, okay. And they said that, you know, ayahuasca and tobacco are the library plants that know what the other plants do. Is that
yeah, there's all different like schools of it, you know. So you could say, oh, this plant, that plant. But that the idea is that yeah, learning with the plants, like communing with your environment, that these people, what they do now with the plants, they definitely like ayahuasca is a big part of what's informing ayahuasca shamans and plant medicine use in a lot of the Amazon. People connecting to ayahuasca, learning how to connect to that, you know, spiritual knowledge through mystical means, and then drawing upon that and asking and learning and developing other, you know, knowledge. And so of plant medicine, how did they first do it at all? And, you know, then they would say, well, the plants told them, and they, you know, could have happened through dreams or, you know, when you're living in the jungle over for long periods of time, you know, like a lot of indigenous people all over the world talk about is just the kind of communion that you can have with your environment that people do experience, you know, in their homes and wherever it is that they live, they definitely get a sixth sense about the world around them. You know, and if you were really to open yourself up to natural wild living things around you, you know, then it's possible you would learn more, you know, than what you've experienced so far.
And with humility, I just know in the different, sometimes sketchy, sometimes authentic journeying groups I've been a part of, sometimes I would traipse away to come back home because I lived with an actual coyote for 19 years. But I did love whenever I would get home, the coyote would go, "Now you're in my world. Now you're seeing what I'm seeing." And she would get so excited, you know, and even if it was 2 a.m., she's like, let's go out for a walk now that you know what I see. And I do think it translates us, you know, again, that kinship, it translates us, you know, the animals like us psychoactive. I know that's true.
Or more wild, you know, like less civilized, you know, perhaps. The psycho, you know, that we, it helps us get back to a state. There's a Robin Carhart Harris. He's a British researcher at the Imperial College of London that's researching psilocybin and altered states of consciousness and studying neuroscience. And they're talking about, he's advancing this theory about entropy of the brain, that the brains, that certain states of consciousness involve more entropy, like dreams and entheogenic states of consciousness. And, you know, then you get into potential chaotic states, but you also get into potential mystical states, versus the way sedation and anesthesia and sleep would bring you down to much less entropic states, less chaos going on in the brain. And they talk about how there's a certain network in the brain, default mode network, that kind of helps bring human consciousness down into this secondary consciousness that just allows for our minds to kind of grapple with the world around us. But unsuppressed, we get into the primary consciousness that he says is probably where the animals and the plants are most of the time. You know, that they're not suppressing with the ego structure the way we are. And so they're much more in direct contact with the chaos of the universe, you know, and able to flow with that. And I've had experience with coyotes, you know, on mushrooms, and
yeah,
for sure,
they like it. And I also loved, I heard a fragment of a TED Talk, a woman on why we laugh, and somebody asked her, well, why do people giggle when they smoke, you know, marijuana? You know, what's that about? And she said, it's not that the marijuana causes people to laugh, it's that we are a laughing species, that it is intrinsically natural to us to be laughing quite a lot more, and it removes the what you call suppression. Like, oh, I love that.
Well, you see that all the time. You know, you see, for instance, if you go to other countries, you know, for example, and there's some subcultures that laugh more, it seems, but you know, if you go to the Amazon, to the village where our center was, Nihuatl Centro Espiritual, which I'm not a business partner anymore, but I continue to consult, everyone's cracking up all the time. Like, they can't stop laughing, you know?
Yes.
They can't stop laughing. And I've heard the same thing about, you know, whatever villages in Africa and different parts of the world, and you run into people that are, you know, whatever, not so suppressed by their culture or society, and you do find that they seem to have a more kind of relaxed sense of humor, you know, and it's because it's a lot of the ego structure is about insecurity and kind of, you know, just getting caught up in your own head, and when you have more community, it's just kind of like you're already past that, you know, you're already living with everybody else, everything's kind of exposed. And they kind of have more fun with each other, you know, it seems. It's not so much about individuating. It's like you experience it together, what's going on.
Right. Well, that's the interesting riptide, though, isn't it? I mean, because I did, the first ayahuasca ceremony I went to was, without me exactly knowing it, was a Senda Daime experience. And I was like, oh, I'm not sure I like the container. And I go, this is paramilitary, you know, and somebody was there and said, well, it actually did start in the military. And so I sort of escaped. It was like, it felt like leaving Jonestown. I was like, I'm just going out for to the garden. And when I was in the garden, I was like, oh, it feels much better. It's really much better. Mm-hmm. So the container, I coined the phrase, you know, that the church is an ordeal, take the sacrament and run, in that experience. But you, with your center in Peru, right, this is a structure, long generational wisdom, as you say, that supports the sacrament rather than imposes on it. Is that your sense of things?
There's different ways to approach it, you know, but then the Shipibo traditional way that I was exposed to, it's guided by song, and you're encouraged to go inward, you know, to have your experience without, any kind of, you know, there's a guy in Arizona, you know, here, the Peyote Way Church of God is a place that was started by a trio of people, and Emmanuel, who had been, and nothing against Native American Church, a lot of people really like that structure, and I've been in that structure, and I found it very powerful, but he, you know, he was saying that, well, you know, so much social interaction kind of brings forward your ego and your personality and doesn't really allow the deeper spirit, you know, the freedom.
Right.
And so, you know, the idea of kind of like, hey, we're going to do it in the dark, and you know, you can really go inward, and no one's, you know, we're going to be singing in an indigenous language that is not going to really, you know, you're going to feel the energy of it, but it's not going to interfere with, it's not going to impose ideas on you.
And, right.
And so that's a big part of it, yeah, to give people that freedom to be in the natural, you know.
Right, and this is part of the quirky riptide in which, you know, there can be sketchy things that happen, but also interesting things. I did go to a peyote ceremony that went wrong right before I went to the ayahuasca ceremony years ago, because I'm like that. But the person in charge of the wood hadn't done a good job, so the wood was all green, and we'd agreed to stay in the tent. It was full of smoke, and there
right.
was this... And at that point, the Navajo medicine man was like, you know, don't close your eyes because the dark is evil. And I was like, oh, I could be outside under the stars, but I agreed to this, whatever. So in the morning, though, when the tent flap opened and this dark, billowy smoke, you know, blew out, and I was finally outside, and I was like, okay, what if I went back in voluntarily as a joke? And there was the Navajo medicine man, and I go, what is this dark is evil stuff? And he goes, yeah. I don't know if I even believe that anymore. And I said, and what is this, you know, the heroic dose, you know, whatever. And he goes, I don't know about that either. Anyway, so we actually had this great kind of equal-ish conversing in the smoky tent that we'd chosen to be in voluntarily. And I go, right, these are interesting conversations. Like my friend Virginia Daly working with the Lakota Sioux, and she was like, what is this tradition that the women don't sing in the peyote ceremonies? And Willard Fulville said, oh, that's a tradition the men made up about 30 years ago. Anyway, so, I mean,
right.
so anyway, there's
no,
a lot
the
of...
thing is, that's the thing. Tradition is alive, you know. Tradition is alive. It's a real thing. It's not imaginary. And so it is what people teach their students, and it's what they teach their children. And so it changes. You know, it changes, and it's open. That's what it always has done. And so people really kind of overstate, you know, this is how it should be or this is how it should be. I mean, they should just be honest. Well, this is how I learned it, and then try to understand why that is they're doing it that way. And you want to be respectful, you know, to those that came before you, but, you know, things are always changing, and within any kind of tradition, in every culture, there is ignorance, you know, and so we have to, like, be open to expose that, right? That's part of what we're trying to do. And I was just at a conference in Mexico last weekend, and they had shamans there from Mexico and Brazil and Colombia and different parts, and even Northern America and United States, and talking about, you know, just women, you know, and just female power and shamanism. And some of these cultures kind of addressing, oh, you know, is it true that in your culture the women aren't supposed to do it, and them having to address that, and then having female shamans from a different culture there saying, no, we're stronger, we're better, we're moms, you know, we love more than these guys do, and just having the dialogue. So the dialogue is open, you know, and that's part of the beauty of these modern times and all this exposure. So, you know, I think people have to listen, you know, and they can't be afraid, you know, about making things better. And so I don't think tradition is requiring that. You know, I think that's kind of like a baggage that people, they put on it, you know. But I think we're talking, you know, for me, the tradition is about, you know, we don't want to throw out the baby with the bathwater type of thing, and remember, hey, there were some people who were open-minded and open-hearted over the generations that were also part of this process. And they were thinking like we think right now, what we're talking about right now, you know. And they weren't just motivated by fear and, you know, whatever, just the same kind of thing, like, whatever, where they have to make a movie about the Boston Globe exposing these priests, you know, and their pedophilia. It's like there were people always saying, that's not right. You know, we don't want to go along with this. And so remembering that that's part of tradition as well. It's about people. You know, it's about people. It's not a concept. It's not a, You hear what I'm saying? Because I think they kind of it gets made abstract, you know, and that's the part that I don't agree with.
Oh, what? Wait, when you said it's made abstract, my mind spaced out and it went abstract. Going, what's abstract again? What
abstract
thing?
Means is like they're just talking about tradition, like this abstract concept, and they're not thinking about what it really is. It's like real people teaching each other and talking to each other.
Yeah, and how about this before I reluctantly release you, and we can think of this as a part one conversation because you have so much to contribute, you know. But everything is, you know, changing with full honoring of what you're dedicated to and the people that you whom you so admire as really necessary medicine, and then, you know, we might say, you know, that a true, I'll use the word shaman, although I try not to. A true shaman, you know, is guiding people to their own direct experience, right? Unmediated by a priesthood. Is that fair enough to say?
Ultimately, yes. I mean, ultimately, they have to. You want to. That's where you're trying to get them, you know, to their own resolution. Right. They have to experience their own healing so that they can. They don't have to say it because somebody told them to say it, but because they feel it and believe it, you know.
Right.
They had the experience. In other words, the true shaman is not self-proclaimed and is not whatever, even through some kind of documentation. In the traditional way, the shaman is declared by the community. In other words, a community of people say, yeah, that guy actually healed me. Or that woman healed me. I would say that's a shaman. It's not for the person to say, or for somebody to show you their, you know, credentials. It's like it's the community of people that are going to be, you know, the real measure of what this person has contributed.
Right.
That's
and,
the traditional
and again,
way. That's how all traditional healers are measured. Yeah. And in their origins, you know, within villages and communities.
Also, I think an important thing I noticed in your book is that in the ceremonies and when you were helping in the ceremonies, the shamans participated in the sacrament, right? They drank too.
That's right. And the Shipibo tradition, yeah, that's how it is. And in fact, in their tradition, it's less. A lot of people say, although, you know, it's maybe there's some variation there, but the traditional Shipibo patient didn't drink. It was for the shaman to drink, you know, and to make contact with the plant spirits to guide the songs that ultimately are believed to be like the biggest part of the healing, along with the dieting with the plants. And so then that the ayahuasca also has its independent benefit for the individual. Well, it depends on so many factors for that to be the case. But now that, you know, people aren't necessarily of that culture and connected to their energies and their ways, that drinking ayahuasca makes it, as Ricardo says, you know, then they can see what we're doing.
Right. So on our way out, and we will think of this as a beginning of conversing because it's a really great conversation, is there a well-wishing you might want to put out to our dedicated listeners, and is there a well-wishing blessing that you'd like to receive?
I would just say that, you know, the point of the book, in a way, is as we try to reopen a universal spirituality, is just to look at health. You know, as a measure that also science is involved in, like, assessing, and that health is something we're striving for. Spiritual healing is spiritual practice. Spiritual practice is spiritual healing. And so I just wish everybody, you know, health in their life, in their hearts, in their minds.
And then back to you, right? Help, as the plant said to somebody in your book, you know, help us, we'll help you.
Help I need is, we have modernspirit.org is a nonprofit dedicated to demonstrating the value of spiritual healing in modern healthcare. Mm-hmm. And so we have one research project going on epigenetics, looking at MDMA psychotherapy and also ayahuasca and traditional plant medicine healing, and other educational projects that we want to roll out and kind of share with professional healthcare providers, you know, the importance of reintegrating the emotional and spiritual dimensions of health.
Absolutely. So, well, thank you so much, Dr. Joe Tofer, and we will, whose website, he just gave one of them, which is great, and then the other is drjoetofer.com, as well as modernspirit.org. Well, thank you so much, and let's continue conversing.
That's wonderful, Caroline. Thank you for having me on.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. And here, right, is my great ally, Chris Welsh, I think.
Indeed.
Right?
Yes.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, adorable. All right, so we had such a good time. I didn't put the numbers out very much, but now we'll really do dedication.
Amen. Well, I was sitting up in my office listening, fascinated by this conversation, and all of a sudden, oh, wait a minute, I got to go downstairs and be on the air with
Chris
Caroline.
That's a reciprocal blessing. You are such a great dance partner, Chris Welsh, a fellow long-term KPFA Kahooter. So we love that. So just as thank you gifts, you know, but really, you know, we're putting our whole entheogenic, there's been a lot of the Vision Activist Show over the years, which is, it's anything we need to be or know to have a culture of sane reverence. And the entheogens have been a large part of that. So we have, you know, Rick Strassman and Derrance McKenna and Andy Weil and Paul Stamets and the whole realm of microdosing that we didn't get to, but we will. In this conversation, but all of that is really in your visionary activist shopping bag. Think of it as your magic backpack, and in which you open it up and you go, "Why, here's what I needed. Here's a magic mirror in which I can hold things up to the culture and go, it's terrible," and then wave with a hand, turn it into a window. Look how it could be, and then turn it again and into a door, and let's go. So think of your visionary activist shopping bag as a way to recognize allies. That bright purple fabulous thing for a pledge of $60, because we like making it, it's a thank you gift, you know, but it's a low fee. We want, you know, thousands of people to pledge $60 rather than one person pledging, you know,
and
whatever it is.
And be carrying around the visionary activist tote bag. Magic is simply a willingness to cooperate with everything. That's what it says on the bag. I've got to have one of these.
It's very cute. I'm using mine now. And so I, with full heartedness, again, by calling 1-800-439-5732 or kpfa.org, securely online, you can have a Visionary Activist shopping bag. It's fabulous shade of purple. It's very thin but sturdy. I've carried heavy things in it. It works for a pledge of $60. And then this essay that I wrote that's pretty darn fantastic, if I do say so, Dreams and Disasters. It's from kind of a history of the world from 1989 when I wrote it all the way through 2050, and some of it's pretty right. And then I also recorded that, so you can have both the PDF file and the recording for a pledge of $100. And then we're opening up our Trickster training, you know, once a week guiding, but it's recorded, so you don't have to be there on Monday night at 6 p.m. And that's where we work all these things with the charts. So for instance, I just got to say this, that's for a pledge of $200. But right now, the mythology of right now is really fabulous. Uranus, for the first time in 84 years, is transiting Pacifica's sun. Wake up and dream, Pacifica and all who listen. And its image, and Pacifica always is a woman bursting with gifts more than she can hold. And that's true of this little beautiful, fabulous network of peace, you know, bursting with gifts. And so is all of our listeners. So the humans, we're all befoibled. We come and go, but Pacifica herself, really strong. And I just have to say this one other mythic news thing. Venus is emerging from the underworld. You know, California, you can see her after sunset going, there she is. She's returned from the underworld with a bag of everything that we need. And today, she's exactly trining Jupiter. It is a great day to be generous. It is. It's not just a pitch or a con. It is, you know, again, and matches. Matches are fun, too, because it is, you know, an abundance. You know, we are being proffered so many gifts, not even just through this humble show and the station and everything, but there's so much beauty around us that wants us to dance with it in the midst of horror, because we got to know, you know, Cape Town's running out of water, Mexico City running out of water. It's coming, you know, Flint, Michigan, no water. Water is crucial. We're heading into...
Mm-hmm. The Arctic is melting.
We're heading into mega misery. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're in mega misery. And what is the antidote? And that's why this show has always been, you know, got to know, compassion with sizzle, got to be fully informed. But then there are plants and spirits and allies and trickster and to ally ourselves with what we admire, that's how we can pull off a renaissance out of this rubble. And that's really why we're encouraging, feeding the heart of all the dedicated listeners by calling 1-800-439-5732. It's such a great listenership. Many of you have been hanging with me for 22 years. It's 22 years. Oh, my God.
Excellent.
Same as Democracy Now!, but this is Democracy Now! On mushrooms. Only once a week. Yeah, I even say that in front of Amy Goodwin sometimes, and she's like, what? What? I go, no, never, we're kin. We started the same year. But yeah, and so now is the time to apply all that we've conversed about for 22 years, the Lakota elders and democratic animism and all of those great
and
things.
That wonderful guy whose name escapes me, who wrote a couple of books and also was in Latin and South America mysticism. I know you would know who I mean.
Well, it could be Wade Davis. It could be...
No, he had a slight accent.
Many guests.
Oh, you've had him on many times. He's a wonderful...
Oh.
Anyway.
Oh, Martin.
Yes, Martin
Prechtel.
Yes,
Martin Prechtel.
Yes.
Yes, that's right. He talks about love drive-bys. Well, we would like to magnetize a love drive-by. You know, it's for everything toxic, let's create the tonic or honor it. You know, people born in the 60s with the Uranus-Pluto conjunction or who lived through the 60s or who just even remember the 60s, I think of the 60s as like a positive sleeper cell. Here we are. So there's a negative sleeper cell and then there's a positive sleeper cell of all of us in spirits kind of waking up going, we'll help you if you help us. There we go. So reciprocal blessing. And so really what we encourage pledging for is pledging for a spirit of reciprocal blessing. There we go. And we throw in a visionary activist purple shopping bag that holds all that you need and dreams as well. And you can put my essay, the PDF of my essay, in Dreams and Disasters and all of those things. So yeah, I guess it's easy to pitch the shopping bag by calling 1-800-439-5732. But you were very interested in pitching socks last week.
Everybody who's listening, you know how she goes? She's talk about a woman bursting with gifts more than she can hold, more than we can hold. It's there's so much in everything that Caroline said. I've been sitting here taking notes in the last 5 minutes, and that you ally with what we admire. Any one of the things that she says you could sit with for like a half an hour and get so much out of it. Talk about reciprocal blessings and that her last guest wished everyone health. And of course, that's what we're wishing for this radio station and this network, of course, is good health. That's why we come to you for your financial support. And that she's offering you physical gifts that you can handle and they will be mailed to you or you could get online and have it. The Trickster Training Council seasonal membership, the Compassionate Trickster Experimental Juju Mystery School, unbelievable, a 3-month subscription, weekly, ongoing astro-mytho-political phone web council. And there is so much happening, as she just referred to, which I only know what I read in the paper, so that's how limited my thing is. I do, what's her name? Barbara Reynolds. She was in the local papers, but about Uranus and about there's so many strange and powerful things going on astrologically this week, much less this season.
It is.
There's a lot of energy
beautiful
going around usual.
And I do want people to think of the goddess of peace, Pacifica herself, and that the mystery, what does it mean that Uranus, the unlocking and liberating trickster ingenuity of nature, is transiting Pacifica's sun right now? What could that mean? Come alive,
yes.
Against all odds, you know, come alive, be even more creative as a responsible voice for our beloved community here. We don't know, but we're willing, because Uranus trickster says to all of us, I'm going to connect you to the coolest things possible inwardly and outwardly, and all I want from you guys is willingness. And we go, we are willing. We're even willing to go to the phone. Yes, we are. It's also a very hypnotic message. mesmerizing time. Here, let me put on my hypnotic voice. Yes, we see you now going to the phone to pledge on behalf of dogs and coyotes and civil respect and plants and entheogens and the many listeners that I have, that we have on the Visionary Activist Show who are in prison. You know, bless you there. Okay, pledge for those who can't pledge, and the dogs can't pledge either because they haven't figured out how to do the small thing on the phone. And also,
or they've dismissed it as unimportant. The dogs. There are other things that are more important to the dogs.
No, the dogs listen. I have a large dog listenership.
Ah, well, this does not confuse me or surprise me. But my own dogs, when it comes to the telephone, they could care less. So it is up to us, those of us who can call right now, 1-800-439-5732, 1-800-439-KPFA, the great richness that Carolyn brings every single week to the Visionary Activist Show. We're so blessed that she's here. And if you are listening, that is why you're listening, because of Caroline. And we're asking you to support the station that brings her to you on a weekly basis. And she's got several gifts she's wanting you to have, like the tote bag, which has that wonderful phrase, magic is simply a willingness to cooperate with everything. That's a $60 donation to KPFA, 1-800-439-5732. The membership and the three-month subscription to the Web Council on the phone, it's $200, 1-800-439-5732. And then her brilliant, if she does say so herself, essay, Dreams and Disasters, both in audio and in print. This is Patterns of Cultural and Mythological Evolution into the 21st Century. $100 donation, 1-800-439-5732. And, of course, what I bring as a Taurus, the very practical socks. Socks. Yay. With Libra rising, they're very attractive socks. They're black socks with red cuffs, red toes, red heels.
And they're anarchist colors.
Yes, and red KPFA 94.1 or something printed on them. $60.
Right. So you can admire your feet. You can go, look, my feet are a radio station.
Or you could be a secret KPFA supporter with your socks.
Right. The bag is pretty much an announcement. Like, hi, yeah. I'm a visionary activist ally. Hello, anybody else here, you know, in the food co-op? So that's really fun. And remember, you know, I haven't put on the bag yet, but let all natural facts be social strategy metaphors. We do have great shows coming up here. That's why we want to stay on the air. There we go. Fill the coffers. Like with Marge Piercy, who says, I will rub my hands with honey and run through the vaults of banks and say, come money, fill Pacifica's, you know, whatever. We will not chain you in dark clanking trust funds. No, soon you'll be free to join others of your kind. There you go. Come, money, and build a murmuring swarm in Pacifica's purse. There we go. Apologies to Marge Piercy for co-opting part of it, but there we go. It's the gist of it. It's playful. And again, if we're not having fun, we're just not serious enough, as trickster ally David Grimes often says. And that's part of our dynamic. This is Trickster Radio. This is Coyote Network News, you know, Mythological News Service, the Visionary Activist Show. And I hear from a lot of you every week. Hi there. So it would be most wonderful. Actually, I think it's a reciprocal blessing. It's like, whatever you pledge, you're going to get it back 100 times in some way by the Venus-Jupiter stationing transit of right now.
And that's what you mean by it's a good time to be generous. It's going to feed you. That's what it's about with Jupiter and Venus. Amen.
And we always honor Mushkal Gosha because our show is Thursdays for 22 years, and that is the night of Mushkal Gosha. It says, tell the story of Mushkal Gosha, which we've done sometimes on the radio, or give a gift in the name of Mushkal Gosha to someone who will help the needy. In that way, the people who are in real need will always find their way. So we're encouraging, you know, when you call the adorable phone team, I love them, you know, just go, I'm giving this bazillion dollars in the name of Mushkal Gosha, or if you can't remember it, just, you know, I'm giving this money, pledging this, you know, and $60 is a suggestion for the Visionary Activist shopping bag and Dreams and Disasters, the PDF, and also the recording for $100 is a suggestion, meaning you can pledge more if you want, or any amount. I also want to, just in the democratic spirit, you know, 3 months of Monday night trickster training, $200. That's actually the price. We're giving this away. And so it's cheaper than not doing it. It's less expensive than not doing it, and we record the Monday night, so you have access to all of our resources backstage, and you can be there live if you want, but also if you're not, you get included, and you get, you know, weekly customized guidance. It's a little even more creatively wild than what we do on the air, possibly, but also experimenting with how can we actually, you know, without hubris, you know, influence collective weather patterns.
Amen.
Because radio is magic. The purpose of ritual magic is to spiral into group mind, expanded wisdom, and tolerance. And that's what we're all here aspiring to do.
Through these 59,000 watts of electrical power, which reach so many millions of people, and online, as that's where you get to the millions part. And it's a blessing. It's all a blessing, and we're asking you to make sure that it stays healthy and keeps blessing. 1-800-439-5732, kpfa.org. You, Caroline.
And thank you, Chris Welsh. Always a delight to co-cahoot with you, and thanks to Erica Bridgman. Always a delight. Again, we love the team. We love the phone room team. There's some great humans here connecting to great humans out there. We're all in this thing together. See you, convene you with you next week. Thanks, team. Oh, yeah.